And I start to do something I had no talent, no competence, no experience at all. So the park was awful, was very ugly. So when we opened the park, we were already close to bankruptcy. And it was a ramp. It was a total, was a disaster.
De Loopings podcast met Wessel Wit.
Van harte welkom bij de Loopings podcast. We zijn in het Belgische dierenpark Peridijsa. We praten vandaag met de oprichter en directeur Erik Don. Erik, van harte welkom.
Hartelijk bedankt voor uw bezoek.
Peridijsa is de best bezochte dierentuin van de Benelux. Ligt in het zuiden van België. Precies 30 jaar geleden opgericht, op 11 mei, 30 jaar terug. Peridijsa is heel anders dan andere dierentuinen die we kennen. Daar gaan we vandaag over praten. Erik, jij spreekt eigenlijk Frans. Maar je spreekt ook een beetje Nederlands en je kunt Engels. Dus we zullen in dit interview, ik zal de vraag in het Nederlands stellen. Je antwoord in het Nederlands, in het Frans, in het Engels. We kijken gewoon hoe ver we komen.
Hartelijk bedankt.
Laten we beginnen met jou persoonlijk. Ik heb gelezen dat jij, voordat jij een eigen dierentuin had, zowel advocaat was als een belastingadviseur met een financiële adviesfirma en dat je in 1993 hier grond hebt gekocht in Wallonië om een eigen vogelpark te starten, Park Paradiso. Hoe is voor jou de omslag gekomen van de financiële en juridische wereld naar de dierentuinwereld?
Well, to be honest, you know, I had to wait until I was 32 to really know what I wanted to make of my life. Or in other words, how I could be useful. I don't know why, but I always thought of my possible career as a way to give something, to be useful. That's the reason why when I was a kid, my dream was not to be a zoo director. No, my dream was to be a doctor, because my father, who was my hero, was a wonderful man. Was not really often at home because he spent most of his life to take care of his patient. He was a surgeon, a very famous surgeon. And my dream was to do exactly the same as him. And when I was a kid, I had the pleasure to go to the hospitals with him and to attend the surgery he was doing. It was really my dream to do the same job and to spend my life to heal people. And when I finished high school, one of the most painful moments of my humble life is that he told me, Eric, please don't do that. Because you are so bad with your fingers, you know, that you will kill everybody. And he knew it was my dream to work like him. So if he did it, and he loved me. So I think it's a way of loving your children to tell them what you really think. So I studied law, which is much more easier, you know, than to study medicine. And my first professions were failings, mislooking. I was a very bad lawyer because I didn't like to do this. You know, when you don't like to do something, you do it bad. And when you like to do things, you do it good, even if you are not a specific talent for this. This is one of my small experience in my life. Talent is wonderful, but you can be surrounded by talented people, which is my case. I'm extremely lucky to have a wonderful team around me. Most of them are much more talented than I. And I think the responsibility of a dreamer is to find the best people around him and to know your limits, which is one of my few qualities. So I was a bad lawyer. Then I worked in different companies and there were failings, but there were lessons. Because, you know, when you try some things and you are bad, then you know that it's not a good direction. So it's just experience. I never thought I was losing my time. I was searching a way to be useful, like my God, my father was when he spent most of his time, you know, to save lives, because he cannot imagine. You are not here to talk with me about my father. But in fact, you know, when you are an entrepreneur, instead of giving, you know, a very structured description of why you decide to create a theme park or a zoo, Because it's always very easy at the end of a story, if it's a successful story, to say that you planified everything, that you structured anything. This is not the truth. The truth is that I wanted to be another man, someone else. And it took me nearly 10 years until I was 32 after my studies to discover what was the goal of my life. I love nature, of course, since I'm a child. I love documentaries. I was not very good at school, but I started to read much earlier than all my comrades because I love fairy tales. I love journeys, Jules Verne, Pierre Loti, and James Kerwood, you know, all these people, these wonderful writers who allow you from your bedroom to travel in the world. And most of these stories are beautiful because they end positively, which is not necessarily the case in the real life. So I was ready to do something of my life because I wanted to be useful. And on one moment, in the meantime, I had created a small consulting company which was very successful. But I realized that the people I was helping had a much more interesting life than I. One day, the father-in-law of my assistant told me, "Eric, there is a beautiful place somewhere in Belgium, in the middle of nowhere, but a wonderful place, an old abbey, you know, full of mysteries, of old dreams, you know, an old place where for centuries people have been praying and things like that. There was undergrounds, there were secrets there." And he wanted to make a bird park because, as you know, there is a wonderful bird park in Germany, close to Hamburg, you know, Vogelpark Walsrode. He had visited and he wants to do the same in Belgium. And I found it was a totally stupid idea. You know, we were in 1992. At that time, you know, you put your gulden on a bank account and you would have 8 or 9% without taking any risk. So to build a bird park in the least touristic place of Europe, no, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but okay, we are far from the sea, we are far from the mountains, we are in close to old cities which really suffered, you know, the industrial crisis. So it's not necessarily a place where people dream to go on vacation or on excursion. So, but I accept to follow him, to go to this place, because I have many problems, you know. I still try to cope with them. I have a problem to say no. So I told him, yes, I will go with you to visit this place. And I was right to do that, because as soon as I entered the old gate of the abbey, I fell in love with the place. It was real love at first sight. I know what it is. I had my... Kippenvel, and that was funny because at the moment I entered the place, this is the place, this is the land, I've discovered the land of the sleeping beauty. I'm going to make a wonderful garden here. Because I forgot to tell you that my parents had a wonderful garden. So since I'm a child, I love flowers, I love trees, and I love animals and birds in particular. And the funny thing is that the guy who introduced me to this place realized a few days after that it was not possible. We would never find a banker. We were not located at the right place. So I don't know what happened in his mind. He showed me the place and then he disappeared. Oh. So it was a big luck for me because we didn't have the same taste. He discovered the place, so I had to show him, not only to show him, to feel respect for him. And he made me a wonderful gift. He disappeared totally, so I was alone with a new dream. And in a few days, could you imagine? In a few days, I gave the keys of my company to my associate, to my partner, and I start to do something. I had no talent, no competence, no experience at all. There was nobody to tell me how to create a bird park because we start with birds. But I was flying, you know. I was spiritually flying, you know. I was so much in love with this place that I didn't doubt it would work. At that moment, after I adopted a lot, but at the very beginning, I was sure it would be a fantastic gift. to the community, to the people, to share beauty. Beauty is the best medicine in the world. Beauty makes people better. I took a good decision is to hire two people. One of them was one of my employees in my former company. He's a financial expert, I would say. He's a very stressed person. You know, he's afraid. He hates risk, and I still don't understand how he accepted to accompany me. That was a miracle. And the other person was probably one of the best ornithologists in Europe at that time, Stefan Patzval, who used the head curator of Walsrode Bird Park. So I had somebody, you know, to guide me in this living dream, which would be soon a living nightmare. En of course,
het was een nachtmerrie. Het is in het begin niet goed gegaan.
Nee, het was een ramp. Het was een totaal. It was a disaster. And I will explain you why. The reason why Stefan accept, you know, to enter into a new dimension with me is that, like me, he hated zoos. I don't like zoos. Can be
a funny opvallende uitspraak. Yeah.
I will tell you why I don't like zoos. And what happened, you know, he was fed up of these small cages. Die kleine kooien waar vogels als een verzameling worden tentoonsteld de mensen. We share a dream to make human and animals happy together. Of course, when I say that I don't like zoos, you know, I'm always exaggerating. I have most respect, you know, for the keepers, for the people who, you know, dedicate their life to wildlife. But that was not my project. My project was to create a beautiful garden where people who cannot travel like you and me would wonder the beauties of nature and say, wow, you know. Okay, don't listen to the bad news. Just open your eyes, open your ears. Look how the world is beautiful if your ears and your eyes are trained to wonder beauty. And that was the reason why I put all my energy in this project. And the beginning was absolutely it was a disaster. Why? We didn't have enough money. I had a good bird specialist, but we were nothing in marketing. It's not because you have studied law that you can communicate. You know, I ended to be a reasonable communicator by having my ass kicked many times by problems. And when we are in a situation where you have no other solution that survive, you know, it's like in the wild, then, you know, you develop speeds and you learn very fast. I still think, you know, that we lived a miracle. Because as I explained you know, we didn't have enough money. We didn't have any experience in building a bird park. My first architect was a nice person on a private site, but not necessarily, you know, the practical architect who knows what's the cost of his design. So we exploded our budget too. I did my best and I was excellent in one thing, you know, it's to gather all the conditions to go bankrupt. And I will tell you what happened, because that's a beautiful story. So when we opened the park, we were already close to bankruptcy. And that first year, we were supposed to get 260,000 visitors, which was totally crazy. And we had in the end 162,000, which for the poor quality of the place was really a masterpiece, incredible success, but not exactly what I had foreseen in my business plan. I tell you something, you know, I have no problem to share with everybody, and especially people who listen to you. I cried every day because, you know, I had borrowed money from my father, my God. I had borrowed money from my former clients. And I was a good consultant, in fact, and I was a terrible zoo builder. I was so ashamed to tell them that we were going, you know, at the speed of the light to the death, that I had nobody to share my problems. Nobody. We were about 20 people here at that time. We're more than 600 today, but we were 20. So the person I had married, my first wife, she had married a lawyer. She had not married a zoo a builder. So my personal life was not easy either, because, you know, and it's not the fault of my wife. It was my problem, you know, that I discovered I was not the man, you know. She knew when she met me. But something very beautiful happened. So the park was awful, was very ugly. You know, you had a lot of cranes. The people who pay tickets to see cranes with beautiful beak, beautiful shape, beautiful feathers. But the cranes they see were caterpillars. You see, not exactly the kind of thing you want to see when you go in a zoo. Tractors, caterpillars, you know, everywhere, you know, in the park.
In plaats van kraanvogels waren het kraanapparaten.
Ja, kraanapparaat. Instead of kranen, kraanvogels. What I decided to do, I published a small form. The paradise is not perfect. Not with a question mark, you know, with an exclamation, you know. Please help us to be better. 90% of the people who answer this small form said, we trust you. Go ahead. We will come next year. Could you believe that? More than 90%. Today, after 30 years, we have a quite high satisfaction rate with our visitors. But it is not better than it was when this park was nothing. So what does it mean? It means, you know, that in life, 90% of the people are fundamentally good people. But the problem is that, you know, the 5 to 10 bad or good people have such an important influence on them. But when you take them with their nature, with their soul, the message of friendship, generosity, and support was really saved me in a way, because I was totally lost. I didn't know what to tell to my banker, and they give me the energy to and also the fact that I didn't want to disappoint the people who had placed their trust in me. So the beginning was absolutely awful. But year after year, you know, in the end, because beauties cannot be resisted. You know, you cannot. Beauty wins all wars, and the people felt the beauty of my project, and the park became more and more beautiful year after year.
Het is een beetje, in het Nederlands zeggen wij, je had de gunfactor. Dus mensen gunden jou het succes.
Absoluut.
Omdat ondanks dat ze zagen dat het park lelijk was, dat er veel verbeterpunten waren, zagen zij wel, dit kan wat worden.
Ze wilden dat. There was a beautiful energy behind this. You know, because they realize, you know, that a small idiot had tried to do something, and it's like in a cartoon, you know, when you see a small ugly being, you know, with beautiful dreams, but, you know, not talented at all. You want to help him. You want to support him. It's exactly what happened here. By the way, we were not only very bad in the product, we were bad in the service, and our image was nearly destroyed, because at that moment, you know, in the early 90s, still to build a bird park or zoo was not really in fashion. You know, there was a zoo in Limburg province, which was just finished at that time. So the reputation of zoos is still, for very bad reason, by the way, challenged by some people. You know, when you feel the smell of blood, you know, the bad side of humans grab it. And especially we had problems with some media, we had problems with an association which is supposed to protect wildlife, and they really insulted us, you know. It was a very hard time. Every day I came back at home, I cried. I said, my God, you know, I could not talk to my wife. I could not talk to my father, who believed, you know, I would do something great. So I was quite alone. Let's say a little bit something positive about me. I think my idea was very beautiful. And as I explained you, people felt there was something. There was a soul behind this project. And year after year, we made less losses. and suddenly we start to be successful after 5 years. And it's for me, it's still a miracle. You know, I will never forget these first 5 years. You know, it's for me, it's still a miracle. You know, we build beautiful worlds. Now we have much more power, financial power to create beauty. I always ask myself, I've never done anything to win money, to earn money. I know that I need it to fulfill our collective dreams, because they are not my dreams anymore today. They are the dreams of all my friends in the park. But my question is a question of somebody with a financial mind will never understand. My question is the following. I want to create a Chinese garden. What happened in 2005? How many visitors do I need more to pay my banker? Usually, you know, when you're in the business world, the question is, I want to make more money. What should I do? Oh, perhaps I should do this because it will be very profitable. This is just upside down. And this is also a very obvious characteristic of Paradisa. Could you imagine, you know, in this place, which is, of course, not only a zoo, we have temples. Real temples. The Balinese community, a lot of friends from Holland, by the way, come each year to Paradisa to celebrate, you know, the Hindu gods, because there is still a community former Indonesians which live in Holland, and they go to Paradisa because they know that there is a real Balinese Buddhist temple. Could you believe that this temple is not open to the public most of the time? Do you know one commercial company who invests a lot of money in temples which are not open to the public? And the question is, why do you do that, Eric? I do that because I think the most wonderful animal ever, and I'm not sure any zoo director will tell you that, the most wonderful animal is the human being. And there's something which makes us so different, you know, from other zoos. We are also animals, of course. But if we really love animals, we should not hate people. Doesn't make sense. It's not that we are able of the worst. Every morning we know that, you know, we learn the bombs, you know, the drones, all kinds of killings, no respect for minorities, we know no respect for nature, global change, whatsoever. That's the dark side. But the light side, the beautiful side of human beings is just incredible. You know, we can show generosity to people who live 10,000 kilometers from us, you know, who suffered from a tsunami. We see a movie, we cry when we see the suffering of somebody. So this is the most wonderful animal, you know. Notre Dame de Paris, the smartest orangutan will not be able to build this. So if you love animals, you should love humans. And that's the reason why, of course, in Paradisa, we want to show the beauties made by humans all over the world. And I think it's also in the interest of the other animals. Why? Because as you know, where you find largest diversity of wildlife is in the equatorial ring between the two tropics. This is the place where the poorest people still live today. So imagining, you know, that you will preserve wildlife, neglecting the population, you know, who are still in a survival mode, is just nonsense. So I think our mission is to bring people together, closer to each other, discovering other culture, enhancing, encouraging curiosity toward a civilization, toward other people, because it's the way to stay connected. And the more you feel connected, the more you feel love for animals, for other cultures, the more energy you find. And that's a message I would like to share with my estimate colleagues from other zoos. Is that I don't think that culpability feeling is helpful. And I will tell you why I don't feel that's the message of the many zoos about the catastrophe, the dangers we animals are exposed to, will stimulate people to make to change their behavior. Or to give money to the people who are working on the field.
Ja, want dat is wat we vaak zien in ook Nederlandse dierentuinen. Een prachtig verblijf met een dier erin. Met een groot bord ernaast waar staat deze dieren worden bedreigd. Het gaat slecht. De mens behandelt ze slecht in de natuur. Verander je gedrag. Maar je zegt eigenlijk dat werkt misschien niet op die manier.
Dat werkt niet. En we hebben dat bewezen. 21 jaar geleden hebben we een grote tentoonstelling met WWF op stand gebracht.
Wereld Natuurfonds in Nederland, ja.
Ja, Wereld Natuurfonds. En de naam van de tentoonstelling was de zesde uitputting. And what we did there, you know, is to show all the reason why animal disappears. Destruction of habitat, poaching, global change. It was... You know, we were not the last to talk about global change. It was 20 years ago, and we made a section which was mainly dedicated to the polar bears, explaining, you know, the challenge these animals are faced. And we saw the poachers. You know, I remember there was a beautiful African elephant with gigantic tusk on the ground, killed, and poachers trying to remove the tusk of this elephant. And there was another place where you heard people with a saw machine, you know, making, cutting trees, you know, in a Brazilian forest. It was an awful noise in this exhibition, awful. You know, you left this place, you just wanted to commit suicide because you feel totally powerless. You have an image of your species, which is just disgusting, and you just want to forget it as soon as you possible. So I don't only think it's not useful to emphasize how guilty we are of a lot of problems. We know it. Well, the good news, because there is a good news, you know, it's there is something which is much more natural, which is much more powerful. It's love. Why do people go to zoos? Why do people have, you know, cats and dogs at home? Because in fact, and that's the good news, we still love animals. You are in a zoo, you spend your day with your kids, your friends in a zoo where the love of the keepers for the animals is obvious. That instead of taking care behind the actor scherm, our keepers show how much they love the animals, the care they give, you know, from the 1st of January to the end of the year, which is a beautiful example of compassion, of kindness. You encourage situation where people can be connected with the animals. This is the reason why your hotels are full. We create a situation where the curiosity of the animal corresponds to the curiosity of the humans. And something happens. You know, you can see that on YouTube, some incredible images of a walrus playing with a girl or playing with a kid, you know, following the hand. You see something which is obvious. The animal behind the glass is as much interested by us than we are when we decide to go to a zoo. And this is fantastic because with this, you can create compassion for the animals which are still in the wild and need our help or support. And from compassion, you can raise action. So we will talk, hopefully, you know, in 5 or I hope before, but 5, 10, 15 years, and you will see that our foundation will become a great contributor to wildlife conservation for a very simple reason, because we use the love for animals and the interest of animals for humans as a wonderful leverage to finance wildlife conservation.
Even een stapje terug in de tijd. Je vertelde dat het vogelpark in eerste instantie erg lelijk was, maar wel de gunfactor had. Na 5 jaar werd het profitable. En in 2010 pas is de naam Paradisa gekomen. Kun je iets vertellen over het moment tussen dat het vogelpark winstgevend wordt en de overgang naar Peridaisa.
Yeah, with pleasure. You know, this place was a little bit a personal liberation. Allow me to say something about culture. I think it's very important. Why is culture so important in a zoological garden? Because if you accept that, you know, we animals have also our beautiful parts and it should be part of the experience of our visitors. You know, when we decide to stop hunting and catching fruits and we start to create the first cities at the Neolithic, something happened. Well, anyway, the agriculture started, you know, so we were not nomads anymore. We start to establish ourselves. And what happened from this moment, humans gained time because they were not only in a purely survival mode, people living in cities. So they gained time, which started to make the difference between survival and life. And how did they use the available time? Well, they use for the worst and for the best. They use it for the worst by being more farther from nature, but they also use it in a beautiful way. It's the birth of culture. Culture is trying to give a meaning to your life, to find explanations, to create arts and pleasant, you know, inventions like music, like poetry, like painting, and in fact, talking like Darwin, the culture is the nature of humans. It's the nature of humans, and it's explained by the evolution, you know, from nomads to sedentary civilization. And coming back to your question. I thought, okay, if I want to bring people closer to each other and closer to the animals, I should allow our visitors to make a travel around the earth in one day by discovering the best of my trips all over the world with one golden rule. Everything has to be perfectly authentic. You cannot imagine how authentic this place here. It's just extreme. You know, the temples were made by the craftsmen of the different places. The totem poles in the British Columbian part of the park, you know, were made in a very special wood, the red cedar, by the last natives who can still carve totem poles. And what's a totem pole? It's the symbol of your family. It's like for the Scottish, the clan, you know, like the kilt for the clan. And each animal symbolizes a quality of the family, of the tribe. So if you want to feel how the people from this area felt 200 years ago, and because they had an interesting relationship with wildlife, you know, that's also something what we want to show. It's that there is no one way to get connected to animals. There are different ways, and there are ways which are more sustainable than other ones. So I decided early 2000 to think of creating a world tour with gardens which really summarize the essential of people and nations. The first world we started this in 2005, was a real challenge, you know, to bring Chinese artist, Chinese craftsman at that time, you know, in Belgium was not necessarily obvious. Nobody had done that before, by the way, or perhaps one century ago. So it was, from an administrative point and legal point, was not easy to bring this artist to Belgium. And we create our first world, totally true, just in the details. And at that moment already, it was in 2006 when we inaugurated this garden. I said, Paradiso is nice, clinked like paradise. But it was purely commercial, easygoing, while my intention was to come back to the roots of humans, the roots of humankind. So I decided to have, it took me many years to have the courage to change the name. And in 2010, I said, no, I do it. And Peridaisa in fact, you know, is the root of paradise. Peridaisa, paradise, you understand it's the same word. But we come to the identity. Peridaisa means, you know, in old Persian language, a garden surrounded by a wall. And the wall is not against other people. It's to protect your idea, your values, against your bad temptation. It's not against anybody. It's against the bad part of us. It's of course a symbolic. That's the reason why, you know, many holy places in the world, many churches, many abbeys are surrounded by a wall. The wall is not against anybody. The wall is a symbol of desire of purity and elevation. So in 2010, you know, we decided to kill a successful brand, Paradiso, which made us totally ridiculous, you know, to most marketing schools. You know, I can tell you, my friends, that there is something which never happens. You are never killed by being ridiculous. You know, the ridiculous situation, the people who make jokes about you don't kill you. That's a good news, because at that time, you know, we were already a little bit successful in 2010. I remember even my father, you know, my God was very angry with me. Why you do that? You know, everybody likes Paradiso, in Belgium at least. There was even a jingle, you know, oh Paradiso, you know, all the Belgians knew this, and you destroy this just for a word which is not easy to repeat, especially for the Flemish people. Paradiso, what does it mean? It's totally crazy, it's stupid. Did you sell it to an Arab country or whatsoever? I heard everything about this. But I think I was right, because I did it for identity reason. You know, we need truth, and authenticity is a key value in this park. So I took my courage and I did it. And in the end, you know, now people are totally used to Paradiso.
En inderdaad, nu in België kent iedereen Paradiso en hopelijk in de toekomst ook in Nederland.
Dank u.
Je vertelde over de themawereld waarmee je bent begonnen. Dat was China. Ik kan me voorstellen dat vandaag de dag, 2024, van het originele vogelpark, de oude verblijven, dat die inmiddels allemaal weg zijn. En er zijn natuurlijk heel veel nieuwe themawerelden gekomen. Kun je voor de mensen die nog nooit in Paradiso zijn geweest, een korte tour doen naar wat het park vandaag de dag allemaal inhoudt?
Yes, with pleasure. So the idea is to allow our visitors to make a world journey in the probably, in my humble opinion, the most beautiful part of the world. China is an incredibly beautiful. It's nearly a continent. It's such a huge place with very diverse landscapes, nobody knows that, probably, or very few ones, you know, but of course, you know, China today is a very powerful country, a little bit frightening for some Europeans. But I think that the first ecologist was a Chinese. Confucius, you know, 400-500 years before Christ, said, we definitely need to live in peaceful harmony with nature. That's everything, you know. Everything is said, you know. What can you add to this? And when you study the Chinese culture, and especially the Chinese garden, you see very beautiful message of respect, of balance, sense of symbol and beauty. The Chinese gardens are the ancestors of the Japanese gardens, which are considered one of the most beautiful gardens in the world. Today, that's the reason, by the way, why this year, you know, we decided to dedicate a new world to Japan, and to show the interesting differences between these two civilizations. So you enter Paradiso, you will discover China with, of course, you know, some emblematic animals like the giant pandas, but also other interesting animals like the snow leopard, the golden takins, beautiful birds. The small panda, you know, the red panda too, beautiful, very beautiful and charming animal. But you will also be totally moved in another dimension. These gardens are so true. Of course, you know, I took the best of what I saw. It's I don't say it's better than in China, but it's the best of what I remember from China. That when people are in this part, you know, they are not in Belgium anymore. And they are not in Belgium because everything is so true that you cannot imagine one moment that it's fake, you know, it's just decoration. There is also a beautiful temple over there, a Buddhist temple, which is called the Temple of the Compassion, because compassion is one of the most beautiful human qualities. And it's the heart of the Buddhist school. And then you leave China, you cross Australia, New Zealand, the koalas, and then you go to Africa. And in Africa, you have a small village, Earth Village. We have also a village on the water, like you find, you know, in Ganvier on the west coast of Africa. You are not in Belgium anymore. And once again, you know, the travel is real. And of course, you will see the African, the most spectacular animals from Africa. And there's a message I would love to share with our colleagues from the zoos, that it's important to pay attention to the architecture. You know, in many zoos, the buildings are absolutely ugly. People think that it's not important to make something nice because people come from the animals. I don't think it's true. If you can allow visitors to travel and to be in another continent with respect to the reality, otherwise it doesn't work, you make your clients happy. You offer them a new dimension. It's not only, that's another point I would like to share with you, which is, I think, not the mainstream opinion in the zoo world. And I think it's a pity. I will make less friends from now on, but you know, this is my duty to tell you honestly what I think. Pretending that we offer to wild animals kind of same conditions in the wild is, of course, a lie. It's just impossible. And I think it's a very bad message to give to our visitors. Why? Because anyway, it's obvious, you know, that the enclosure, how large they can be, have nothing to do with the real environment of animals. And it's not a problem. In fact, trying to create the natural condition is the problem. Why? Most of these animals were born under human care, and their curiosity is useless. Their curiosity is genetic. The animals are curious to survive, to avoid to be eaten, to find a prey, to escape dangers. That's the reason why animals are extremely curious. It's a survival condition. But they have the same curiosity in a zoo. But they have no danger. They, you know, if they have a disease, they have a vet. If they don't suffer hunger, they don't suffer thirst. You know, there are five criteria, you know, to describe the welfare of a wild animal. And we should repeat that because it's very important. The two first conditions, you know, it's the environment, the natural environment. We cannot compete with that, of course. The second condition is that it's a consequence of the natural environment. For wildlife, is that, you know, of course, the animals are encouraged to develop their natural behavior. But there are three other conditions where a good zoo is much better than in the wild. And I'm not ashamed to say that. You know, for many people, it's a taboo to compare a zoo to nature. I think we should do it. As I explained, animals in a zoo, first of all, they are not afraid. Who likes to be afraid? They have no thirst. They have no hunger. And when they are sick, they are taken care by doctors. And most of the time, they die naturally. They don't die being eaten. Because being an old lion or an old everything in the wild is not a pleasant situation. There is no retired hotel, you know.
Een bejaardentehuis voor leeuwen, nee, inderdaad.
Absoluut. And we should say that. So instead of trying to recreate natural habitat, we should do, I would say, nearly the opposite. We need to satisfy the curiosity of the animals who are seeking for interaction. You had a wonderful professor Van Hove, and there was another guy, Frans de Waal, well, unfortunately passed away a few months ago. These scientists show all the empathy, the social links that most animals desperately need to have. And this is something we should do in zoos. We should make these animals happy with being connected with them. That's the message of Peridaiza. And you know, it's very easy. You don't need to be a Nobel Prize to see if an animal is happy or not. Does it mean that we succeed every time? No. It happens, you know, that we also receive animals which had stereotyped behavior because of a former experience. And we cannot say that we can avoid this for all of them, but you can avoid it for most of them. And when an animal is playful, active, having fun, when you see how much love he exchanged with a keeper or sometimes with visitors, there is nothing to say. It's obvious. No comment.
Dus in de loop der jaren zijn er ontzettend veel themawerelden ontstaan. Hoeveel zijn er nu in het park, verschillende themawerelden?
Er zijn er 8.
En Japan wordt dan 9?
Ja.
En ik heb gehoord dat jullie uiteindelijk naar 12 themawerelden
willen. Ja, ik moest een cijfer beslissen die een goede motivatie zou zijn om te stoppen. Naar de mensen hier vrezen een beetje dat ik altijd mijn nieuwe projecten... Dus ik heb beloofd dat wij niet meer dan 12 werelden zullen bouwen.
Maar Peridaiza is toch nooit af? Dit park is toch nooit dat je hier rondloopt, ook al zijn er 12 Zeker. Werelden, dat je denkt, nu zijn we klaar?
Nee, nooit. Waarom? Perfectie is nooit geraakt. Je kan altijd beter doen, je kan altijd schoner doen, je kan altijd meer dienst, meer geven, beter zijn. En dat is mooi. Ik denk dat onze missie is elk jaar, elk maand, beter, mooier, meer nuttig te worden. Er is zoveel plaats voor verbetering. Zoals iemand ooit zei, we are just at the end of the beginning. En ik vind dat boeiend. Bijvoorbeeld, Peridaiza is niet alleen een dierentuin. Het is ook een plaats waar u een reis rond de wereld kan beleven. En de wereld, wat is de wereld? Het is ook muziek, festivals, folklore. Dus de schoonheid van andere mensen. Het is leuk, het is een fantastische ervaring. Als mensen in het buitenland gaan, zullen ze naar die plaats gaan. Dus we kunnen dat ook hier doen om relatie met andere mensen te kunnen verdiepen. En van de schoonheid van uw beschaving, van uw cultuur te kunnen genieten.
Als we het hebben over die toekomstplannen en die nieuwe themawerelden die er nog gaan komen. Als ik binnenkom in het park bij de grote nieuwe entree, vorig jaar in gebruik genomen, en ik kijk naar links, dan zie ik daar een gigantische kas, tropische kas in aanbouw. Een megaproject. Kun je iets vertellen over wat daar gaat komen?
Het is een oude droom. Ik heb een kleine voorkeur voor de tropen. En in het bijzonder tropische planten. Dus sedert jaar en jaar droomde ik van een zeer grote kas te bouwen. This greenhouse will be 4 hectares. So it's more than 4 hectares, because there will be different levels. Dat het de grootste tropical greenhouse in the world is, doesn't mean anything. Because, you know, probably in 2 or 3 years in Dubai or in another place, there will be something bigger. So the size is not the most important thing. But you need to have enough dimension that your visitors can be lost in the tropics. So you need a dimension. And it's here we choose 200 meters by 200 meters. And we've a small part of ocean, so there will be a big hole. The hole is already there, by the way. You know, so people will see, you know, the ocean from under. They will have the possibility to sleep under the water, because there will be 88 rooms in these greenhouses. This is, you know, a summarize of our 30 years of experience and try and error process. It will be a very special place. You will have, of course, you know, the rainforest with the animals you imagine in the rainforest. You will have a small part of the ocean with, of course, sharks, beautiful fish. You will have manatees, you know, which are this so sweet, you know, sea cows. They're so beautiful, so charming. And you can sleep with them. Well, there is a window, you know, to protect you a little bit. But this immersion, you know, which is in fact, with all my respect, an easier way than in the wild to watch nature. It's not easy, you know, to see, unless if you dive, you know, but you cannot do this for hours. And you are in your room and you see, you know, these fish, you know, going to the window, looking what's inside this room, what are these people there, what are they doing exactly in the bedroom, you know. The manatees will ask themselves the same question. It happens already with the polar bears, with the walrus, you know, and with the brown bears.
Ja, voor de mensen die dat niet weten, je kunt nu in Paradisa slapen, praktisch in een dierenverblijf, met de glasplaat van je kamer, je doet het gordijn open en je ziet daar tijgers, beren, walrussen. Ja, dus jullie hebben de ervaring al. En dat gaat nu ook in die tropische kas gebeuren. Mensen kunnen daar blijven slapen, naast zeekoeien, et cetera.
Absoluut, absoluut. Daar, dat is iets dat wij intuïtief dachten, is dat de nieuwsgierigheid van mensen door de dieren wordt verdeeld. En ik vind die relaties zo fascinerend in feite. Dus al de slaapkamers die wij bouwen, hebben tot doel mensen en dieren zo dichtbij te brengen.
En daarom is het ook een groot succes, want ik hoorde al een bezettingsgraad gigantisch hoog. Als ik een kamer wil boeken, is het heel moeilijk, want ja. Het zit bijna helemaal vol.
Ja, het is een beetje ons probleem op dit ogenblik dat we zijn dichtbij de 100% bezetting. Het is te veel natuurlijk. Dus we zijn nu bezig met nieuwe kamers te bouwen. Maar er zijn bevoorrechte situaties. Dus je kan niet honderden kamers dichtbij dieren te plaatsen. Het is niet goed voor de dieren. En de schoonheid van de belevenis is ook daar vernield. Dus er is altijd een balans te vinden. Dus daar in die gigantisch tropische ser zijn wij tot de conclusie gekomen dat wij bijna 90 kamers konden bouwen. Onder zee, in de bossen, in de steen, in een soort van steengroeven ook. Dus altijd een verschillende ervaring. Wat een beetje grappig is, is dat wij die kamers voor mensen die ver van Paradisa wonen. In feite, 90% van de mensen die bij ons slapen, kunnen in hun eigen bed slapen. Het is niet de afstand die de reden is, het is de ervaring. Dat verplicht ons veel meer kamers te bouwen voor de mensen die van ver wonen. En niet noodzakelijk een gepaste hotel in de buurt zullen vinden.
Over de tropische kas gesproken, ik heb gehoord dat er ook een mogelijkheid komt over een aantal jaar om te zwemmen met dieren.
Ja.
Hoe zit dat?
Ja, dat is een beetje de Paradisa gekheid. Wij vragen ons altijd de vraag, waarom niet? De meeste mensen stellen zich de vraag, waarom? En wij zien het anders. Ja, ik vind dat mooi mensen aan te moedigen te zwemmen met of dichtbij wilde dieren. Dus we wilden een waterpark bouwen. We willen dat daar wij familiegericht zijn ook. Dieren zijn fantastisch, maar als wij andere mogelijkheden geven aan families om een mooi belevenis met kinderen, met broeders, zusters enzovoort. Dat moeten wij dat doen zonder een enge visie te hebben. Maar de vraag is, Paradisa is schoonheid. Schoonheid is een godsdienst, zoals iemand zegt. Dus meeste waterpark met die tuben, die plastic dingen zijn zo lelijk, afschuwelijk. Hoe kunnen we dat paradijs aanmaken? Dus we hebben een concept van een van mijn reizen naar Mexico gebruikt. Dus we zullen terug naar de Maya-civilisatie, beschaving, terugkomen. Dus we hebben een mooie storytelling. Ik ken die kraftman, de artiesten, de vakman, ken ik ook. Dus het zal misschien een van de zeer schare mooie waterparks zijn. Maar wat het belangrijkste punt is dat telkens als wij fun met ontdekking en connectie met dieren kunnen vergemakkelijken, moeten we dat doen. En het idee is dat wij een lazy river laten van het waterpark verlaten. En door de sanctuary, sanctuary is de naam van die gigantische serre, dat wij de zwemmers laten reizen dicht bij de apen, dicht bij de vissen, de manatees en andere dieren. Dan is natuurlijk de ervaring niet te vergelijken. Er is geen plek in de wereld waar je zoveel dieren vanuit een waterpark kunnen bewonderen zonder de dieren te verstoren natuurlijk. Er is geen rechtstreekse band tussen de haaien en de zwemmers, hopelijk. Maar de visie en de relatie. Ik ben ervan overtuigd dat relaties zullen worden. Dat dit is een beetje onze ervaring. Dat een uitzonderlijk moment voor die bezoekers zal worden.
Ja. Dit is een uniek concept. Ik heb dit nog nooit gehoord. Waar ook ter wereld dat ik in een Mexicaanse tempel kan gaan zwemmen. Hmm. Tussen de dieren, met een lazy river naar het tropische regenwoud.
Dat is de paradise touch. Ik zeg telkens aan mijn vrienden hier dat een van mijn grootste kansen is dat ik niets wist over dierentuin waarin het ermee begonnen was. En perhaps, misschien zou ik ooit een klein boekje moeten schrijven hoe voordelig is niks te weten. Dat is vrijheid. En het is ongelooflijk hoeveel voorbeelden ik heb van ideeën die ik gehad heb, waar mensen zeggen, dat kan niet, het is onmogelijk, het is geen goed idee, doe dat niet, het zal nu nooit lukken. Juist omdat het nooit gedaan was. En ik ben ervan overtuigd dat in enkele jaren veel andere plaatsen zullen precies dezelfde of ja, met kleine verschillen dezelfde richting zullen nemen. Ik ben ervan overtuigd dat het positief is voor alle partijen. Het is interessant voor de dieren dat zij hun leven, die zo verzekerd worden, zo beschermd is, een beetje boeiender te maken door een zichtrelatie met zeer mysterieuze dieren als de mensen. En voor de gewone mens die niet kan... hoe zeg je? Dive to dive?
Duiken, ja.
Ja, duiken. Hoe kan je duiken? Is misschien nog beter die vissen te kunnen bewonderen dan in natuur waar je toch een beetje kans en veel geld nodig heeft.
Dus het is dan ook een heel nobel doel, want iedereen die niet kan reizen, niet in staat is om de wereld rond te reizen, gaat een dagje of twee dagen naar Paradijsa en beleeft hoe het is.
Weet je, een compliment die mij zeer tevreden stelt, is complimenten van mensen die hoogleraar zijn bijvoorbeeld, biologen, ethologen, die de echte natuur zeer goed kennen en die eer meermaals komen zijn omdat ze het zeer gemakkelijk zien, dezelfde voldoening voor uw bewondering voor natuur te krijgen. Het is niet alleen, dat was een van mijn eerste bedoelingen, is de gewone mens die onze kans niet heeft de schoonheid van de wereld te kunnen bewonderen voor een zeer redelijk prijs in feite dichtbij hun woning te kunnen genieten. Maar dat wij ook wetenschappers hier zien die in feite dezelfde emotie voelen. Ik vind dat zeer motiverend.
Dat is een groot compliment, inderdaad. We hebben het net even kort gehad over dat Peridijsa als merk nog niet zo bekend is in Nederland. Gaat daar verandering in komen? Even los van deze podcast, die natuurlijk ontzettend goede reclame is. Maar gaat daar verandering in komen? Gaat Peridijsa ook reclame maken in Nederland? Gaan ze Nederlanders proberen te lokken?
Ja, we zullen dit jaar voor het eerst starten. Advertentie in Nederland te doen. Maar we moeten tegelijkertijd werken. We moeten zo spoedig nieuwe kamers kunnen aanbieden. Dat is misschien de unieke ervaring die je nooit anders kan op zo'n intensiteit, zou ik zeggen, kan beleven. Ik ben er ook van overtuigd dat, wetend de liefde van Nederlanders voor dierentuin, dat die inhuldiging van Sanctuary, de grootste kast ter wereld, met wat ik al beschreven heb, een sterke reden zal zijn om eerst de pers aandacht op te wekken. De rol van de pers is natuurlijk zeer, zeer, zeer belangrijk. En dat wij veel meer dierenliefhebbers zullen hebben door het feit dat die ser zal een echt, op vele redenen een echt wereldrecord zijn. Onze vrienden van Nederland zijn plantenliefhebbers. Jullie zijn niet alleen dierenliefhebbers, jullie zijn ook wereldkampioen in planten kweken enzovoort. Dus dat spreekt vanzelf. You know, de schone bomen en planten ter wereld komen naar de veilingen. En jullie hebben in Nederland de beste kwekerij ter wereld. Ik kan u verzekeren dat het ook een zeer goede reden zal zijn om naar hier te komen, dat ik, zoals jullie, een echte plantenliefhebber ben en ik kies de bomen persoonlijk. We zullen een ongelooflijke verzameling van gigantische cactus samenbrengen. Dus in feite is het verondersteld een woestijn te zijn. Maar dat zal geen woestijn zijn dat er zoveel cactussen zijn, dat het zoals een rainforest van cactus zijn. Dat zal misschien niet die authentieke woestijn zijn, maar dat zal geweldig indrukwekkend zijn. Dat is enkel een klein gedeelte van de tropische ser, om u een idee te geven dat de planten zullen tenminste zo indrukwekkend zijn als de dieren.
Nu is natuurlijk de belangrijkste vraag van iedereen die dit luistert: wanneer kan ik dit gaan beleven? 2025, 2026, hebben jullie al...
Volgend jaar.
Volgend jaar, dat is het doel.
Ja, begin van zomer.
Oké. Dan wens ik jullie ontzettend veel succes daarbij.
Hartelijk bedankt.
Ontzettend bedankt voor de gastvrijheid, voor het inspirerende verhaal. En ik wens jullie veel succes de komende jaren met het ontwikkelen van Peridijsa.
Hartelijk bedankt voor uw aandacht.
Je luisterde naar een aflevering van de Loopings podcast. Heb je vragen of opmerkingen? Mail dan naar podcast@loopings.nl. En wil je geen afleveringen missen? Abonneer je dan via de verschillende podcast apps zoals Spotify. Bedankt voor het luisteren en graag tot de volgende keer.